I'd like to share with you some comments and some thoughts that I have on what I think might be the potential from Senate Bill 170 if we have that kind of a activity in the state. Sometimes I'm really quite frightened with the sort of abandon in which we watch people in our society drop out. I was really elated when the first time that I read the Native Claims Settlement Act and found that in developing that, they had structured the corporations to provide a vehicle for those people who are involved to actually participate through ownership. I had the good fortune of living in Nome for the first 26 months of my time in the state back in the late 50s. In those days, one of the frightening things to me was the lack of being that a number of people who I was became very good friends with there, to the whole system, you know, in which they live, we live, and they would be living forever. I didn't think I'd be here that long then, so really, I wasn't a part of it. After the Claim Settlement Act, I had a number of opportunities to be back in Nome, and it was really elating to find out that these people were really discussing, and to some degree it was negative because corporations may not have been doing what they want, but they were interested, they were involved, and they were a part of it. Now, I see one of the potentials of this general stock ownership as having that potential to do that for a large segment of our residents of Alaska who at this time find very little to really let them feel like they're a part of, you know, what's going on here. In our society, you know, for a number of years we've talked about striving to join the middle class because that was the place that you could really start to be somebody if you got to. We see situations in our society now where those people who are living in the middle class can barely make it. That goal has not really achieved what we thought it would when we promised people that, you know, you work hard, you get there, and you'll be somebody. We watch the aging in our society now get to the point where they should be able to sit back and reap the benefits, and they're not there. Now, I don't think this will solve all of the problems for those groups, but a project like this, where there were some benefits coming to people directly from the fact that they belong to this state of Alaska, they're residents of the state of Alaska, they're part of the system, I think may be a step, you know, maybe once or twice a year, to allow them to feel like they're a part of this thing. I don't think anybody will get rich, but I'm not sure that each time when you look for a goal of bringing people into our society in some manner or other, it has to be through the objective of making everybody rich. Now, I really think that we have to do more of this kind of thing, find ways of tying people into our society, because each of those who drop out then become a threat to the continued existence of this. I'll end my comments with just this thing that always frightens me. Back in 1967, my original home is New Jersey. Well, I don't think this is utopia. I do think it has the potential of moving a few more people into what I think is the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Frank. Mr. Miller.
Just not a question. I just want to thank you for your testimony. I think you've articulated the real value of
this legislation better than, we've heard a lot of good testimony, but you've articulated it better than we've heard in the whole hearing process. And I just thank you for saying what you said.
Making me feel like I'm not your chief of witness.
Mr. Metzger.
Yes. I agree with the concept and what a lot of people would like to accomplish with this legislation, but I'm yet to be convinced that it does what you want it to do. I think that a lot of people are confusing this with what is already in existence, being an ESOP, or an employee's, Sears is an ESOP, I believe. Could be, somebody might correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they are. The employees buy into the corporation. And Sears does very well by it. They have enthusiastic employees. I think it's one of the greatest programs going. And I would like to see more corporations enter into the same method of doing business. It gets rid of the union versus management problem. It really changes a lot of things. And they're a more productive company. Sears employees do quite well, because everybody is anxious to be productive, and the Sears salaries are above other similar operations that do not subscribe to the same method of doing business. And this is being confused with that, and that is wrong, in my opinion. And the reason I say it's wrong, if you get back a check from Uncle Sam, and you get back $300 for your taxes, or $500, or whatever you get back, do you suddenly feel an involvement with a program? No, you don't. And do you feel an attachment with the program? You don't. And it's not going to get that. People are still going to view this as a state and as a part of the state. And it's something that everybody within the state has a right to be involved with. So it will still be confused with the state and viewed as a state, and if this program ever exceeds 10-20% of the total average income of the average Alaskan, you can be sure that it's doing so well it's going to swallow the economy of the state very shortly thereafter. And if that occurs, you won't have any longer the opportunity to go out and open up your own business. You will have one choice in life, and that will be to work for that corporation that owns the state. And that's a possibility that I see occurring with this. And I'm not convinced that'll occur. It's one of the problems with it that I see, or something I've got to be convinced won't happen before I'm going to support it.
I'd like Brian to respond to a couple items, if it's okay.
Yeah, I'd like to hear
the number one. I think the group that I'm talking about, the majority of them, will never see an opportunity to belong to a series of employees, whatever you call it. Number two, I think that if the people receive the check as a giveaway, it's not because that's what it is, it's because we haven't communicated clearly enough what it is and how it develops and how they belong to it and how it arrives. You know, I see probably communicating the wherewithal and what this corporation is about is maybe one of the major problems that would have to be overcome in order to receive some of the benefits that I think would exist from the approach that I discussed.
I truly see all of the things that you've described happening, and I don't perceive it as a giveaway for the people own it. I'm just saying that that's what the average individual is going to interpret it. They're going to be. They're going to view it as I view my any sort of a rebate I might get from the federal government or anything else. And I see to a small degree all the things happening that you're suggesting will happen, but not to the large degree that a lot of people would like to perceive. And the risks are very great. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Austin?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Frank. Okay, who wants to be next, Mr. Thompson or Mr. Love?
Are you still here?
Guess Jim was faster. Mr. Thompson.
I'm a resident of Juneau. My name is James Thompson, and I'm speaking on my own behalf. I'm here mainly to recommend that the committee and the legislature take a very hard look at this proposal and not rush into it. I've been very concerned the last few days seeing in the papers this somewhat of a push, it appears, that we must act right now. The promoters are somewhat promising us a nirvana and asking us to make our decision right now, or we'll lose out on the big pot of gold. If I told you that I had a surefire investment scheme that would give you untold wealth, but you had to buy right now, would you do it? Probably not. You probably want to take a look at it. Unless you were prone to confidence schemes or believed in free lunches. And I suggest that the legislature do that here. There are many problems that should be investigated very thoroughly with this bill and not rushed into. The concept of this program is not new. I know of at least three approaches very similar to this that have been taken in the past. 1935 in California was called the End of Poverty in California. It was an ill-fated program by an Upton Sinclair. In fact, truly this program closely parallels Huey Kingfish Long's Share the Wealth, Every Man a King program. And if you look even closer, it is even very much parallel to the National Corporate Socialism Scheme as spelled out in Mein Kampf. I'm a bit worried about this people's capitalism in this area, at least as far as the long-range concept. Initially, it looks tame. Even though the proponents of this bill call it or claim that it's people's capitalism, the way that this bill, Senate Bill 170, is structured is that it will probably end up being a bureaucratic economic structure competing with private industry. The reason I say that is that if you look at the makeup and the way the board of directors are going to be initially set up and later, is going to be by political appointment by the governor. And that board of directors will be by nature entrenched. In order to wage a successful proxy battle against, let's say, a corrupt or bad management, would require a minimum of $100,000 to remove one director. In other words, we think the people are having a say, but because of the broad ownership, we won't have any say. The whole say will be with that initial board of directors. I also question, and it hasn't been raised, at least not here tonight, whether the state of Alaska would ever go against a state-sponsored corporation if that corporation were involved in corruption or self-dealing or maybe antitrust violations. I think this is a very ticklish problem that the legislature should deal with in this bill. But my main concern really is that this whole program could eventually, and I think Ray Metcalf has talked about it, could lead to a breakup of the system that works. Two bulwarks, I think, of our society are the separation of church and state and the separation of economic and political power. If economic power can be kept separate from political power, I think it can serve as a check and a balance to that power. This proposal, if carried to its extreme, would tend to rip apart that fabric and would be a concentration of political power. And I think this is one of the aspects, if you do read Mein Kampf, that was their whole purpose of having this national capitalism, was to bring this concentration of this economic power within the political sphere. And as a citizen, this scares me. The main problems that I think that should be carefully considered by the legislature are these. One, the state's role. It's been raised already, this question of if this is just a new vehicle for the state to increase its debt. There's also the problem of the credit rating of the state could be jeopardized. The wording in the proposed amendment, the sponsored substitute, 1050-100A, does not go to the question of where this monies will come from. Will it be from the permanent fund? Will it be from the state general? And how much can be kept? I know people have interpreted here that it would be very small if it was just in the summer, but that's not the word in this legislation. And this is very broad. Also, the state's role in this same section, it gives the commissioner of revenue the right to review the loan for purposes of guarding against fraud. Well, it appears that the state is going to have an economic role in this, or at least we're putting our credit on the line. And I think that the commissioner of revenue, if this does go in, could also have the ability to review the loans for economic viability. If the state is putting its credit and its money on the line, if you're going that far. Another question that has to be addressed, and I think has been already, is the direct competition with free enterprise. The problem that worries me here is that the GSOC will either have to make bad investments, or it will have to compete directly against free enterprise if the investments are good. I mean, really, and you think about that, they're either going to have to compete against free enterprise. If you want to go on economic viable project, if not, fine, they'll have to go on a bad project. And I think this defeats part of the hope or the purpose of it. The other section, as I already talked somewhat, is the selection of the board members. This is purely a political animal. It will not be selected on economic benefits, or it might not. The aspect of four non-resident and non-participating directors somewhat worries me. I do know that we need outside help and outside expertise in this state, or we supposedly need it. I don't think we need four. I think if you limited outside directors to two, you would still keep a two-thirds control by Alaskans of this corporation. I think that's one problem that should be addressed. The problem that the Forbes article presented, I think, has to be addressed. It has to be addressed thoroughly. The rewards that will go to the initial qualifying people versus the risk that will go to all the taxpayers. Believe me, there is no free lunch. And in a corporation, especially one that has absolutely no assets, the risks are even greater than one that has some assets, much greater than any of the native corporations. They had assets. We're starting with nothing but borrowing ability based on the state's credit. And our risks are fantastic. And the other point that I did mention was with the state, and how can we set up a safeguard where the state would actually, or the Attorney General's office would actually go for corrupt or antitrust violations that this corporation might conceivably have. I'm a little worried that the state would sit back and let things go in this area. There are some other problems that need to be addressed. One, which did come up with the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, was the proxy solicitations under federal securities laws. They had to address it finally with an amendment. It was a great problem to them. This corporation will not be exempt, and the costs are going to be horrendous, especially the initial costs. And the proxy filings with such broad ownership and not concentrated ownership, and complying with the federal regulations, are going to be very high yearly. This is one cost area that should be addressed. Other minor problems that somewhat bothers me, and it's another problem that came up with the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. This is the initial issue to minors. There does not seem to be any provisions for guardianship problems as there was in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which has been a problem even with the legislation. There's also the problem here that the miners can obtain initial stock, but they can't obtain it in later sales. I don't know if this is fair or not. This is a problem that should be addressed. Another problem that it might be minor, but it struck me in reading the bill, you're not permitted to sell a stock for 5 years unless you cease to be a resident of this state. When I see this along with the purchase of the BP pipeline, which is an appreciating asset, would not this might tend to have people drop their residency here for a while so they could sell the stock within that 5-year period? It may be a minor point, but it is a point. Section 1050.026 implies that the GSOC may acquire properties via eminent domain. I do not believe this is the intent of this legislation. But if it is, how can a non-governmental entity do this? And if not, I think this section should be clarified. I don't think that is at all the purpose of this. This is something in the wording that may be.
Could you repeat that section?
It's section 10.50.030. No, pardon me, 10.50.0206. Subsection C. It's just the wording. On first or even second reading, it implies that they could apply it by eminent domain. Yes, that the corporation may not invest in properties acquired by it or for its benefit through the right of eminent domain. It appears as if the state could acquire properties via eminent domain for the benefit of this corporation. I feel that this section should be retained, as it is about the only place that the shareholders will have any say in the structure of the corporation. And I don't know why it was dropped in the sponsor substitute. Without this provision, the potential dangers of the politically controlled management are even greater than in the prior proposal. People really have no say in amending and setting up the board of directors after initial. And the initial, they'll have no say either. That'll be Governor Hill. Or whatever governor is in when this is there. The other problem is in this loan guarantee fund, I think Jim Duncan has already raised some of the questions. I asked, where is the money going to come from? Does this mean we'll be directly subsidizing the corporation and assets, and will the assets of the state of Alaska be in jeopardy? I think this has to be reworded. I wonder, will this affect the permanent fund? Will it take money out of the permanent fund? And as I already said about the Commissioner of Revenue, I really think, gentlemen, that the state should seek the advice of third-party economists in this matter, and not just one firm who somewhat has a vested interest in this program. I really think we should seek the counsel of possibly people of the caliber of a Paul Samuelson or Milton Friedman. I think you should get diversity opinions from economists. And I think the reason we should do this is there is a possibility that a monster could be created by men of goodwill, acting in me as a citizen's public interest. I always get a little bit worried when people want to use the state to achieve visions of great social change. Their short-term goal might be achieved, though I think the long-term aim would not be. What could follow would be a collective state from which we'd all recoil and look. And I don't think the results would be rendered harmless by our good intentions. And so I think before we go into it, and should be very thoroughly looked at, and not just the report from one firm. Thank you very much.
Any questions of Mr. Thompson? Jim, thank you.
First of all, concerning the problem of an entrenched political management, how would you react to the idea of prohibiting management from voting proxies?
Management from voting proxies? Out of 400,000, what would it matter? Soliciting proxies? In other words, then management would have to leave after 2 years, 3 years?
No, what I'm saying is that generally, as I understand the practice in corporations is for management to solicit proxies as management. Spend the funds of the corporation to solicit proxies. Now, if there were a prohibition in this on the directors from spending funds of the corporation for purposes of soliciting proxies, that would somewhat...
That would somewhat diminish that effect, very definitely. That would be one provision that if you did would be very positive.
So the big worry here, there's a big plus factor in broad ownership, but there's also, when you have broad ownership and not concentrated ownership, you can't get to the owners without an awful lot of money.
Another point you brought up was the idea of that AgSoc would have to compete or get into bad investments.
Well, now, I look at the laissez-faire. If it's a good investment, if it's a good program, there's enough money around and enough capital around, private industry will be there. People will be there if it's a good program.
So, I mean, there are a lot of areas where that a corporation can get into where it doesn't compete. And you take, and those are generally the types of investments that I've heard suggested for this corporation, buying BP share of the pipeline. You know, common carrier, buying RCA, which is a regulated utility.
Right, that's another philosophy which I shouldn't get into, but I think if you're going there, you should limit in your legislation the types of investments they can make and make it to investments that private industry can't or won't go into.
Those are only money losers, aren't they?
Basically, that's about what you come down to.
Well, that seems to defeat the whole purpose of the thing, if you limit the...
The whole purpose of the thing, obviously, is to be somewhat of a replacement of private industry. And the long-term goal of this is scary. It could replace it. And it could replace private incentive, which goes along with private industry. Everybody's waiting for a check. Free lunch.
Well,
not doing anything for it, but flipping a coupon.
I mean, nobody's seriously suggesting that municipality of Anchorage get out of the telephone business. I mean, there's no problem with government involved in some areas.
That's right.
Oh, why? Well,
if you limit it, very definitely limit it, to an area where, shall we say, private industry does not operate in a completely free atmosphere or in a free, semi-free atmosphere, given the government regulations we have, sure, your utilities would be one area probably to look at.
State of North Dakota owns a bank.
I know the state of North Dakota.
Now, I mean, there, you know, that's...
it's not a very profitable.
Well, I understand it is.
It's a very good bank for the Farmers Loan Program. State
but,
of Alaska owns banks, if you really want to look at it.
Well, all right, yeah.
Or we
but,
are a bank.
I mean, who's going to decide what's a proper area for government to get into? And what... What would you consider
why
proper?
Why should government get into? Why should government have to be come in and go into these programs?
Well,
why can't free men left to their own devices do it if it's needed?
Hey, that, first of all, we're operating under your assumption that this is government. I'm not sure I'm willing to buy that. But,
well, it may not be. I mean, I'm scared of that.
Okay, operating under that assumption, what would you consider valid areas for investment?
Valid areas for investment? Necessary utilities, light requiring that utilities, one area. Construction, highway construction, ferries. I'm just a little bit scared of the long-term ramifications.
Well, the hour's late, and Jim, we certainly thank you for your expert testimony. I think I learned a few things, and it reminded me of my philosophy I've had for a long time. Yes, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had one question. One point that you raised in your testimony, Mr. Thompson, was that perhaps people might, if they bought into the BP pipeline or something, since that investment were depreciating, they would want to sell the value of their share. They want to sell the share because it's declining. corporation doesn't return much, or retain much in the way of earnings. But, you know, it starts out with its original assets. I suppose those can increase, but it doesn't retain earnings. So then the value of the share doesn't have much to do with the retained earnings or even the assets of the corporation, but rather just whether it pays out any money or not.
No, the book value, and that book value is what the corporation is going to buy back the shares for. It's going to be depending on your retained earnings plus your value of your assets.
I wouldn't understand that. I would understand that the dividend that is paid, what you would do would be to calculate the present value of the future income that dividend represents, and that would be the value of the share.
On how this bill is, this bill represents it that the buyback will be on book value. One.
Well, book value may be less than the actual value is the point I was coming to.
Yeah, it may be more, but you're not going on a value unless it were in a freely created marketplace as far as your future earnings, your future income. So the only way you can really assess the value of any shares here, because it is not creating free markets, will be book value.
Well,
and I think in this legislation, as far as sponsors substitute, they have done that. As far as purchasing back any shares, will be at book value. They have a set of valuation.
But what, setting a value on something that's not the real value doesn't change the real value of it.
Well, the real value would be that. You're talking about a hope for value, somebody projecting out earnings over the years and figuring this is what the price should be. That's what a stock sells for in the New York Stock Exchange. That's on people's hopes.
Mm-hmm.
The book value of that stock may be higher or lower, depending on whether people are pessimistic or optimistic about the outlook of the company, based on management, another item. So, no, the book value is going to be not your dividends paid, but your retained earnings and the value of your assets. Less the liabilities, of course. Okay, thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Jim. Mr. Love, there's the next one on the list here. You still got some stamina left? A little gas left, huh, Jim? Yeah.
I guess that's one way to put it. I'd like to pass out some written comments I prepared for you.
Okay. Maybe just we can pass them down from the end there.
Thank you. I'd first like to testify, looking at the GSOC thing, by taking a look at the proposal that was put before us on the table here, the one that has a white front page and all the blue pages in it. And what I've done is I've taken a look at the very last pages, which deal with the numbers on the BP stock purchase, which I'd like to talk about. I'd first like to say generally about the GSOC that the risk of sounding like a Nazi, I see good and bad parts about it. I mean, I think there are some things that seem like they would be attractive for Alaska. There are some things that in my mind I kind of wonder about, and I'm going to probably touch on both things. First thing I want to talk about, though, is in discussing the BP investment, I'd like to first say that I work for a group called Alaska Public Interest Research Group, and we are an intervener in a tariff case before the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the Alaska Pipeline Commission for setting a tariff on the BP, as well as all the other carriers, for the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. And when I looked at the figures, I tried to figure out where a lot of the numbers came from. And as I discussed in this memo, the first thing I noticed was that the purchase price, the acquisition price, was listed at $1.3 billion, and the book value, as I understand things from the ICC filings, indicate that the Alyeska said the book value is a little higher. They said it was about $1.463 billion. And that's just one thing I wanted to point out before I discuss the rest of it. But the big thing that I noticed in here were that all the figures were based on a tariff, pipeline tariff, of $5.50. And as I mentioned, the memorandum here is, as you know, BP is currently operating with a tariff of $6.35 a barrel, which is the tariff they originally filed with. And I assumed in my memorandum that the $5.50 tariff was simply the $6.35 tariff with the income tax component removed. And again, I don't know, maybe you can enlighten me as to where the $5.50 comes from.
Yeah, I think maybe I'd better explain this particular sheet. You will notice on page 2 it is listed as Schedule 18B. You're looking at one page out of some 75 schedules that were run a while back. Schedules were run on all sorts of different tariffs, from the lowest to what we thought was the highest possible tariff. So 550 just happens to be one sheet out of many. We also ran all sorts of different values. The question of valuation is simply this: is BP's interest worth book value? Is it worth more? Is it worth less? So if you saw the complete schedule, you'd find numbers higher than 1.3. lower than 1.3. The same thing would be true of things such as interest rate. The inflation of operating costs, 7% per annum. We've also run them at a different inflationary interest rate. So please do not make very much out of one sheet out of 75 or 80 sheets. This was for our own purposes in terms of seeing how things work under different possible scenarios.
Okay, well, I guess the reason I wanted to talk about this sheet is because as far as the people in Alaska, the citizens of Alaska, this is what we have before us representing the type of gains and dividends we might see if we enact the GSOP and we walk into this BP thing. And I'd like to just show you, in my opinion, if I can finish.
Well, I think that's completely wrong, and you know, I did not put this packet together, and I also question putting one sheet in there when you're talking about a whole host of things. And professionally, I will not accept that this is anything more than one out of 75 different sheets, and you know, I don't think it's. Probably should not have been put in at all, and certainly wasn't put in by me. But it is work done by our firm.
Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, then in those 75 sheets, what was the range of tariffs and pipeline values that were used?
Senator Malone, and I'm doing this out of my memory, I think the lowest tariff was $4.50. The highest tariff was something like $7. In terms of range of values, I think we ran the program from 1.1 to 1.7, with also a whole different host of assumed interest rate. So I just want to emphasize. And I won't interrupt again. I just want to emphasize that we're not saying anything by this one sheet of paper. It's a meaningless sheet out of a whole bunch of them. It's not our best guess or anything such as that.
Can we move on?
Yeah. Well, if I can continue, because I think I agree with on that point. I mean, because I'm not sure that this has much value, but I would like to discuss very briefly, if I can, the situation with BP Pipeline, because I have heard that over and over again as a potential item for purchase on the GSOC, and I'll try and run through it very quick because the hour is late. But just basically, this is disgusting. The ICC rejected the $6.35 tariff. They adopted a tariff of $4.65, which the Supreme Court upheld. And the situation is right now that most parties in the case are betting that the tariff in the Pabst pipeline case is going to be somewhere between $4 and $4.50. When the proceedings are through, there's going to be a tariff established this summer by the FERC. It'll probably be 4.5 or higher. It will be different for each carrier because they have different capital costs. And then there'll be a phase two hearing where they consider a lot of other issues like cost overruns, and at that point the tariff's going to go down even further. And it's going to result in a lot less attractive figures for BP than what you have before here in terms of, at least in terms of the revenue side. I'm not too sure about the operating expenses that are presented here, but I wanted to make sure that it was crystal clear to the public that because we have a scenario through here, which is maybe one of 70 scenarios, and it does show a fairly attractive dividend rate of, say, $285 in the first year, no upfront investment and everything like that, that we're not trying to oversell or, to the public something that may not come to pass. And I wanted to make sure that everyone understood that the tariff was probably going to be quite a bit less, and if certain issues are resolved in the state's favor, like the issue of the pipeline cost overruns, the investment that BP has in the pipeline might be a lot more marginal than it would in even a normal utility situation, because that'll be an unrecoverable capital asset that they'll have. I wanted to say that certain savings that the GSOP has will not accrue to the shareholders of the GSOP in a regulated industry like the pipeline, because they'll be passed on to the ratepayers. And I think that's possibly in the state's interest because of our situation as a shipper of royalty oil and collector of severance taxes. It's not really the worst thing in the world for us to participate in something that actually lowers the transportation cost of the oil. So that in itself might be of some value to the state. And there are some that have said, well, since we own that part of the pipeline, maybe we'd be better off with a higher rate. And I think that's clearly not the case. If we own a larger percentage of the pipeline, that may be the case. If we owned all the pipeline, a high tariff would be like a severance tax or even something a little cruder than a severance tax. It would be a way of generating revenue. But because the amount of oil we own is larger than the 16% of the pipeline we're talking about buying, we would really be a net loser. There's a number of other reasons why a low tariff in the state's interest, including the rate of payment of the land claim settlement act, which is paid out of royalties from the pipeline and determined by the wellhead size, and the impact of a high tariff on developing future reserves, the anti-competitive effects it has with the owners of the pipeline that are competing with the non-owners and new lease sales like the Beaufort, things like that. So without going into a lot of detail, I just want to say that I think that the BP thing has a lot of unanswered questions that will be a lot clearer once the FERC decides on a tariff sometime this summer, and I think we'll be in a lot better position to analyze the proposal. I would like to say that the primary benefit I see of the GSOP proposal is that it provides an opportunity that many people may be willing to take to pursue large resource development projects or utility investments in what is very closely akin to public ownership, which is, I think, an area that there's not enough exploration by policymakers right now, an area that has a lot of opportunities for the state and the entire public. And I think there's a political problem with considering public ownership of, say, developing certain oil reserves or owning large utilities or other large industrial ventures, some of which maybe like the BP proposal are not as much of a gold mine as they may appear at first blush, and others that maybe are very profitable. But the GSOP, as Mr. Revels presented, and Mr. Coletta, and a lot of well-known patriotic Americans who have never been referred to as socialists or anything like that, because they're proposing an idea like this, I think it becomes more saleable to the public to consider these types of possibilities, and that's one of the reasons why I'm interested in the GSOP. It becomes the type of thing that people seem to be less afraid of than other types of broadly distributed public ownership. And I think that provides a lot of opportunity to the state. The conflicts that were discussed with the Forbes article where eventually the citizens of the state and the owners of the GSOP will not quite be the same people, and the inequities of the developer is something I think that have to be considered. And if I can ask a real quick question, is the GSOP able to offer tax-exempt bonds? It's not. That's another disadvantage the GSOP would offer over a more traditional form of public ownership, same with the RCA system, is that RCA would be able to finance the system through tax exempt offerings, and that would result in some fairly large savings. Same with the BP pipeline. Sure, if we bought that not in GSOP but in a regular state-owned corporation, we'd be able to really offer a cheaper tariff and lower the transportation costs even more than we would under a GSOP, because we get the benefit of not paying federal income taxes, but we'd also get the benefit of being able to float tax-exempt bonds to finance some of the capital improvements and investments that are needed. So I see the GSOP as an opportunity for the state to consider a lot of things that politically it's been very tough for them to consider. And yet, if some of the, I think if people would analyze some of these projects in a very disinterested way, would see would bring a lot of big economic benefits to the state. Another advantage I see with a GSOP over traditional public ownership is because its stock would be so widely dispersed among Alaskans, it would have a great deal more of accountability on a lot of issues. For example, in the Alyeska pipeline situation, where there's a big dispute thought and strike breaking and things like that on the line, I think it would be a different situation where management would be less inclined to go out and try and break unions in an area like that. I think the same thing might be true in terms of affirmative action goals and hiring of women minorities, things of that line. And in terms of pay scales and things like that, I think that the GSOP is less apt to be trying to take advantage of its employees, and in some cases take advantage of the environment at the expense of the local community. If it's something that's broadly owned, then you could mobilize certain kinds of support within the community. So with that respect, I mean, I think that there's a lot of advantages over a corporation doing business here that's owned by people that live here, as opposed to that's owned by people in New York, Wisconsin, or wherever. And I think that has a lot of advantages to the state. You take a look at the development of our oil reserves, you can look at problems like the OCS problem, where the federal government estimates that 80% of employees are immigrants, or are not really, immigrants is the wrong word, are people that are transient and just come up here to work the jobs and leave. So there's an opportunity for things like in local hire and other things to have programs that offer a lot more benefits to the state. One area that I think is probably the very best investment that GSOP to consider and everything would really be, they took a hard look at the Beaufort Sea area and determined whether or not that is an area where the state might want to have a GSOP rather than Exxon or ARCO or a BP, which is owned by the British government, and move in and develop. Like, we don't want to find ourselves, I think, in a situation with Prudhoe Bay, where a foreign government really controls 51% of the reserves and 51% of the pipeline. And that's not a GSOP, but it's certainly state socialism, or whatever you want to call it, at least from a foreign government. And it would give us the opportunity, in a very major project like that, probably one of the few opportunities in terms of raising the capital to have it done locally, and it resolves a lot of tax problems that we always have to worry about dealing with the industry. And I think that it also offers potential for the kind of dividends that would really make big differences in people's lives that live up here in terms of large profits. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Jamie. Mr. Malone?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Love, you represented I gather my impression is you're representing certain corporations as almost engaging in economic imperialism in Alaska by, let's say British Petroleum or something like that. And is there any good reason why, if we set up a GSOC, that we couldn't use the corporation to engage in economic imperialism in other states or other countries, more particularly, so that if there is some sort of economic dislocation that occurs that affects the corporation, at least it's not going to have a direct impact on the economy of our little state here.
You mean like England has with British Petroleum?
Right. That's what I mean.
Well, I think I haven't read the bill carefully. It's probably within the kind of legislation. I would prefer it if the state directed its development efforts within the state. I think that that's the proper area for this type of corporation be involved?
Yes.
Why?
I think that economic imperialism to other people is distasteful to me as economic imperialism done on to us by another community.
Yes,
Slide.
Thank you, Senator Bagley. Mr. Love, as always, you give us such food for thought. What I'm worried about in your presentation is the getting back to taxes, and this was at the latter part of your report, but you built up to that very nice, and you know our budget is over $1 billion. Now, that is taken from many sources, private industry, the individual themselves, small business, federal government, whatever we can grab to get money out of. If we had a corporation like ESOP, which is basically, as expressed before, not in these terms, it's going to be a big tax loophole, so that these people can get the money back to the individual shareholders. And $1 billion leaves you $2,500 per person or $400,000. What would happen to the state government? Would it completely fall apart? Or would the people be severely taxed, much more than the $2,500 they gain in shares?
Well, I'd like to say two things. First, I think you're completely wrong in your assertion that it's just one big tax loophole. The big tax loophole you're talking about is one thing. It allows the people in Alaska that were owners of this to avoid paying corporate income taxes to the federal government. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't make any difference as far as the way it's presently structured, as far as the payment of, as I can understand, any state taxes. It does shift the way taxes are collected, though, in that if it was, say, it was a sort of three scenarios. One would be the present situation where we tax, for example, British Petroleum minus profits. The other possibility, if the state had a state corporation on it, we would just receive the income and we wouldn't have to tax them, and we'd use that and go into our treasury. And the third scenario, the GSOP scenario, would be that the profit from BP's operations would go to individual Alaskans, and then we'd have to levy income taxes against those people, or you know, some type of wage or property taxes against the people that receive the income. And I think that it would change a little bit about the way you would run government. I imagine that it's a little tougher to levy taxes against individual stockholders than it is against levy taxes against BP. That doesn't mean that the money wouldn't be there. It just means that it would change the political climate for levying taxes. You would collect it from different people. There's a lot more people in Alaska than there are stockholders in Alaska BP.
Well, let's use your example strategy, especially this evening with British Petroleum. We brought in $100 million in taxes to the people that would mean $240. How could we make that up in state taxes with all the demands on the state to provide various services? Obviously, the individual would be taxed more than the $250 that they're gaining.
I think you lost me. I'm not sure if I can answer. I'm not sure if I follow you.
Well, if we're getting $100 million. Say on an annual basis from British Petroleum,
okay,
and taxes.
Right.
If that were divided up to the people, it would be $250 per person.
Well, GSOP, it's my understanding that GSOP would continue to collect that money.
Right, not Uncle Sam. I mean, not Uncle Alaska.
No.
GSOP would have that money.
No, Uncle Alaska wouldn't continue to collect that money, as far as I understand. As I understand, GSOP would continue to pay state income taxes and state other state taxes.
Could I help to clarify just the tax treatment and what?
Mr. Gary Gauss.
I'm Gary Gauss. I work for Senator Gravel, and I was involved in the process of putting the federal legislation together. The way the tax works on this corporation, the corporate income tax is eliminated and the shareholder is taxed on his share of the corporation's earnings. so that the same income is taxed as was taxed to a corporation, but it's taxed at the individual level. And also, all of the income of the corporation must be distributed, or 90% of it. So that the tax still occurs, but it occurs at the individual level instead of the corporate level. Now, one of the arguments that was made in working on the federal legislation was that in spite of what theory tells us, in fact, the owners of the pipeline are not paying taxes on the income. And the reason for that is that essentially through depreciation and investment tax credits, they have sheltered that income for a period which will turn out to be some range between 7 and 10 years, depending on the particular tax owner. So the Treasury at least gave some substance, the Federal Treasury at least, gave some substance to the argument that the GSOC, in fact, would increase total federal revenues because the income that the corporation currently is earning and sheltering would no longer be earned and sheltered, but distributed to the individual stockholders and taxed both federal and state levels as part of their income. So that's the way the tax treatment works now under the legislation.
That is true about the early years of the pipeline owners who use the federal tax activity.
Thank you, Jerry. Any more questions? Any more testimony?
Yes.
Okay, I don't have a name for the last. Is this Mr. Pomeroy?
Carol Pomeroy, yes.
All right. I don't know about the rest of you. I've got to be somewhere at 8:15 in the morning. I've got to prepare before I get there.
I'm properly warned. I should just like to identify myself. I came to Alaska in 1949 on a homestead. I subsequently had the privilege of serving as the first mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough and had very extensive dealings with the oil industry on taxation and a good many other matters. I deal quite generally in my background professionally is in public management with emphasis on taxation. I do some writing, reports on economic outlook and taxation. I have not had the opportunity to go into the details that would enable me to give you a lot of testimony and a lot of points, but it seems to me that the most important consideration is the principle involved in this proposal. And in that connection, I associate myself with the testimony given by Mr. Thompson, and particularly one part of it. He said he suggested that a third party be consulted. I first met Mr. Kelso in Anchorage when he made a very fine presentation 2 or 3 years ago concerning employee stock ownership. This, however, was quite a different thing. This was his crusade to work out various means by which employees could have capital formulation by profit sharing and by other means to buy in, like what Sears is doing at the present time to some extent, and then become owners. And I was so pleased with that I wanted to know more about it, so I went to Yukon Office Supply, which was an example he used. And I found out that it works, but there is absolutely no variation from the tax structure that applies to every other private enterprise. And we're talking about quite a different thing here. And I would say to you that the intricate web of the implications are so broad that I would carry Mr. Thompson's suggestion a little further and say that you could perform the best public service with respect to this whole subject, whether it should be dropped or go ahead, by having a commission of 2 or 3 of the finest economists in the United States and 2 or 3 other disciplines, and spend some money on it, because what you have is a crusader who has gone from one kind of crusading to an entirely new thing, and he doesn't know any more about it than you people do. he's doing the best he can in his consultation, and he has a fine dream, and it may be all right. But I should like to give you just a little bit of what I mean by principles involved. When I was borough mayor, there was a question of tax exemption to plants coming in, and I didn't like that. And Gene Guess and I consulted at length about whether or not we should have an industrial bond authority that would permit being done what has been done in Valdez with respect to the waterfront development. And I got it from, I think it was Indiana, where some city, because of some law they had there, and because of rather flexible IRS regulations, or rather loopholes weren't plugged, a $90 million plant was built for American Can. And I said, let's do that. So we went into it pretty thoroughly. And then there came up just one thing, ethics. Did we have a right in Alaska to do something special, to get a special advantage that would have to be paid for by somebody else? And then when it came to Valdez using its authority to build things on a waterfront, I think that authority came just out of Title 29 of the wharves and docks and warehouses and refrigeration plants and so forth. And as to my own personal position with respect to it, I had a little bit of difficulty, but it rather seemed to me that since that project was a common carrier and the entire United States was going to benefit, that it was all right. Now we have a proposal here that the people of Alaska form a corporation, and that they get a special benefit, and that's been referred to. Now the extent to which that, what that amounts to, and the offsets, I'm not prepared to say, and I wouldn't take your time, but it is getting a special benefit, and there must be an offset to that special benefit. And the ultimate, if this is put into motion in this state, and it would take hold and it would spread throughout the state, you'd change our whole society. In fact, you would drain the private enterprise element of our society, or you would cripple them very badly. And as to it being a private corporation, that's total nonsense, because that would be that corporation would be the greatest power in the state of Alaska, because the people who are the stockholders would be concerned with what are we going to get out of this. And if you had a bad year and you had to squeeze somewhere to get a special advantage, that would be a force, a special interest force that would be greater than the legislature could conceivably stand up against. And you would have, in effect, whatever you call it, you would have a corporate state. That's what it amounts to. And I won't take your time to go into when I went into Italy just before Mussolini was hanged by his heels, and I was dealing with finance and helping to finance Naples, a city of 1 million people. And our financing, Mr. Chairman, was very simple then. We just printed the money and said, this is money. And it worked very well. But I saw that and saw what was called corporate state entities. I saw it in Austria also, and there's some of that background that gives me a great concern that the implications are so intricate and so intertwined and so far-reaching that you would do a very fine public service not to shove this through now this session and to do have a commission so that we can all know more about where it's going to take us in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pomeroy. Yes, Jerry, Mr. Goshi.
I'd just like to make one part of the comment, and that is that there's been some discussion in the legislature here that this is a brand new idea, that nobody's had a chance to look at it, that it's something that we all need to give careful consideration. And I agree, we do all need to give it careful consideration. But I would simply point out that the process of laying out this legislation and studying it began nearly a year ago for the state legislature, and the Budget and Audit Committee spent a great deal of time over the interim looking at this legislation, and I think their conclusion as to their careful consideration of this legislation can be found in the fact that almost every member of that committee has co-sponsored that legislation, both Republican and Democrat.
We have a mighty sophisticated constituency in this state. Yes, Hugh?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is, I guess, a question should go to Mr. Miskimen. I'm not sure who would be able to answer it, but maybe the Chairman of the Budget and Audit Committee. On the
Mr. Miskimen.
Computer runs, the analyses that were made, and we've got one sheet in the back of our book here, marked GSOC Financial Projections. It said there were quite a number of these done. Is that right?
That's correct.
Good. We have the rest of the sheets.
I would think that would be up to Senator Coletta. That was not part of the basic contract. This was work done in preparation for a meeting held in London with management of British Petroleum. So it was not part of the basic design study.
Mr. Chairman, follow up on that. What do you mean it was a part of a something done in London? I don't follow what you're talking about.
Senator Coletta and a number of other people from Alaska did meet with British Petroleum back in October, November, December. I guess it was December, with regard to whether or not British Petroleum was in effect a willing seller. And what you see here is one sheet of a good deal of work done to assist them in preparation for that meeting.
To assist whom?
To assist Senator Coletta in his preparation so he would be well informed for purposes of that meeting. That's why I say that I personally don't feel that I can release that report, which was done for a purpose separate from the design study. So I'm referring the question to him.
Yeah, I'd like to make a request then, both chairmen, that I think that information should be available for the committee. I made a statement earlier that I don't think that we should confuse the GSOC idea with this particular proposal, and I have a follow-up question along that line. What other types of investment were evaluated for GSOC in Alaska?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question, because the negotiations with the Budget and Audit originally contemplated on our part at least some preliminary work with relation to potential investment. It was the decision of Budget and Audit to specifically exclude looking at individual investments. So our work, with the exception of this special project, did not in any way look at investments as such. I am personally generally familiar, as I say, only very generally familiar, with some of the investment possibilities that I've heard over the last few days. In some other of the cases, I don't even know what people are talking about when they mention such and such dam. So I'm curious that there has been no work done on any specific investment with the exception of some work in preparation for that meeting last December.
Here I might add here, I guess we all got the Washington Post handout. It says here the legislature has placed Louis Kelso's San Francisco investment firm under a $180,000 contract to draw up the blueprint for this economic creature, a state-chartered corporation owned by everyone, empowered to borrow money, perhaps with a credit guarantee from the state, and to invest the money in private business adventures, etc. in view of the our investment, I think we should be entitled to the other pages, John.
I come back to the fact that the 180 was not paying for the work done on this. That was a separate $25,000 contract. And, you know, you're really asking the wrong individual in terms of the fact that I was specifically told not to give the report to anyone at this point.
You know, you make me all very suspicious since I was on somebody's campaign team before I changed parties many years ago. Yes, Mr. Malone.
Mr. Chairman, I've already made a request to the chairman, including the chairman of the Budget and Audit Committee, along those lines, and I'm sure they'll follow up on that. But just one final question to Mr. Miskimen. Do you believe that in your professional opinion, you believe that the legislature should base a decision on the ESOP idea on the either the in all or in part on this sheet containing the backlist book or on the runs generated on the possible income from a BP pipeline purchase?
Definitely not.
Thank you.
Best one question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I don't want to keep harping on the BP thing, but I'm just curious about one thing. The delivery volume a variable in any of your runs?
My memory is that, yes, we did do some runs based on a expanded capacity for the pipeline.
Do any with a declining delivery volume?
No, I don't believe so.
Yes, Mr. Martin.
Thanks, Senator Bradley. So if we gave you two major projects that Alaskans have been interested in for some time, to really give us some concrete, it's like you're being in the belly of a whale right now. We're sounding each other off. And I'd like to get something concrete. People interested in the oil, acting gas line. If we gave your corporation that as an example, can you make it for us? If we gave you bottom fish as a major project under the ESOP, could you take those things?
In terms of studying whether or not they would be a good investment or not?
Yeah, if ESOP would make us all have extra income.
Yes, and as I indicated earlier, the initial discussions with the Budget and Audit Committee did contemplate some research work, but as I said, it was not done. Everything can be researched. Certainly, the management of AgSOT would have to either have competent people on their staff to do that work, or they would have to find consultants who were qualified to make such an investigation. This is the way prudent management in private corporations, which is precisely what this is, decides whether or not to make an acquisition or not. So there's no mystery to doing this. It's a question of talent and money in order to do the necessary research work to allow management to make an informed decision. It doesn't guarantee success, but let us hope that it does reduce the odds, so to speak, in terms of successful investment.
Any more questions by members of the committee? Mr. Metcalf?
As it was suggested that, I'm taking up the point, the suggestion of tax shelters and this not being what a tax shelter is. When you shelter taxes, you have to spend it. You have to do something with it. You have to put it someplace, on a capital investment, or obtain an investment credit. To do that, you've got to spend it. to spend it, you've got to pay somebody a salary. If you don't pay somebody a salary, you pay for a product that somebody else paid a salary to produce. Either way, you put the money back in the private hands, and you do it this way by working, and another way by giving it out.
Well, I think the question is, where does the income go when it's sheltered? In terms of a large capital investment by a major corporation, the income goes to the corporation, and eventually to its stockholders, usually in the form of capital gains on the sale of stock. I can take issue with you that you have to spend money in order to get a tax shelter, because I've had some personal experience with shelters where you do spend $100 and get $400 in deductions. Mm-hmm. They're unusual, but they do occur. And in the corporate world, you can get depreciation deductions equal to your investment, which you can use to shelter everything.
Mr. Chairman, before we depart for the day, I'm going to leave you with my parting comment. I'd like to point out this really isn't the first GSOP. First GSOP was created about 40 years ago, very similar concept. And when they created it, they thought the best thing to do was to get into the auto industry. And they approached a gentleman who manufactured a few cars a year and had a promising looking operation and named his car after himself. And they called the corporation the People's Corporation. And they pursued the development of this automobile and eventually acquired another corporation, which was Mercedes-Benz. The one corporation they started out with was Porsche. Well, they decided that Porsche was a bad deal, and finally decided to go with the Volkswagen, which then they named the People's Car. The man who started the GSOP had a little mustache.
Poor man's automobile.
And that is a fact. It was an effort to bring the economy under control of the state. And it was deliberately done to accomplish just that. And it was done in a very similar fashion. And I'm not suggesting that's what you're up to. I'm just suggesting that the fears that are shown here of a corporate state are realistic. They're valid.
Well, I'm
the
sure
moral that is, you shouldn't buy a used car from a guy with a mustache.
Small
mustache. Sure.
Hey, John.
As a concluding remark, I would like to say that I've been from the great state of California. I've been tremendously impressed with how hard you gentlemen work. I hope to go back to Sacramento and tell the legislators there, who I've never seen work at night, how hard people do work. With regard to that last comment, I certainly agree with much of your thought process tonight. And I'm sure that is precisely why Budget and Audit kept saying to us to be sure to separate this corporation as much as possible from the state legislature, which is precisely what we've attempted to do within the constraints of the federal legislation. It could have been designed differently. And there have been some people who I've talked to in the last several days who have said, we want more control. We want to have the legislature to have the ability to really have their hands on the throttle of this corporation. But the thrust of our design coming from the Budget and Audit people was to separate it as much as possible. Whether we've separated it to your satisfaction from the state of Alaska and the state of Alaska government, I don't know. But certainly that was the general thrust of the feeling by Budget and Audit as we've worked this last summer.
John, as I see it, the governor's got a little too much power that he can appoint his own cronies to the board of directors. That's one of my differences. Well, sure thank everybody for their time. the testimony, and especially my education I received personally. I got a lot more of the other side than I ever got before. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Mr. Pomeroy, for giving me a view of the other side. Yeah. So,